Chapter 5. The patron recognized Ravitch immediately. "The lady is in her room," he said. "Can you call her and say that I am downstairs?" "Her room has no telephone yet. I am sure you may go up." "What is the number?"
27.
"I don't remember her name. What is it?" The patron showed no surprise. "Madou, Jean Madou," he added. "I don't think it is her real name, probably a stage name."
"Why stage name?"
"She registered as an actress. It sounds like it, doesn't it?"
"I don't know.
I knew an actor who called himself Gustav Schmidt. In reality, his name was Alexander Maria Count of Zambona. Gustav Schmidt was his stage name.
Didn't sound like one, did it?"
The patron would not concede defeat.
"Nowadays so many things happen," he declared philosophically.
"So much doesn't actually happen. When you study history, you'll find that we are living in a relatively calm era."
"Thanks. It's enough for me."
"For me, too. But one has to find consolation wherever one can. Number 27, you said?"
"Yes, sir."
Ravitch knocked. No one answered. He knocked once more and heard an indistinct voice. When he opened the door, he saw the woman. She was sitting on the bed, which stood against the partition wall. She was dressed and wore the blue tailored suit in which Ravitch had first seen her. She would have looked less forlorn had she been lying somewhere negligently attired in a dressing gown. But this way, dressed for no one and nothing, out of mere habit which now had no meaning, there was something about her that touched Ravitch's heart. He was familiar with it. He had seen hundreds of people sitting this way, refugees driven helplessly into foreign countries. A little island of uncertain existence, that was how they sat, not knowing where to go, and only habit kept them alive. He closed the door behind him.
"I hope I'm not disturbing you," he said, and at once felt how meaningless the words were. What was there that could still disturb this woman? There was nothing that could disturb her.
He put his hat on a chair.
"Were you able to settle everything?" he asked.
"Yes. There wasn't much."
"No trouble?"
"No."
Ravitch sat down in the only armchair in the room. The spring squeaked, and he could feel that one was broken.
"Did you intend to go out?" he asked.
"Yes. Sometime later. Nowhere in particular, just to go.
What else can one do?"
"Nothing. That's right, for a few days. Don't you know anyone in Paris?"
"No."
"No one?"
The woman raised her head with a tired movement.
"No one, except you, the patron, the waiter, and the chambermaid." She smiled faintly. "That's not many, is it?"
"No."
"Did Mr.—" Ravitch tried to remember the name of the dead man. He had forgotten it.
"No,"
the woman said. "Razinsky had friends here, but I've never seen them. He fell ill as soon as we arrived." Ravitch had not intended to stay long. Now, seeing the woman sitting that way, he changed his mind. "Have you had dinner already?" he asked.
"No, I'm not hungry."
"Have you eaten anything at all today?"
"Yes, this noon. It's easier during the day. In the evening—"
Ravitch looked around. The small bare room smelled of cheerlessness and November. "It's time you get out of here," he said. "Come, we'll go and have something to eat." He expected the woman to object. She seemed so indifferent that nothing could arouse her. But she stood up at once and reached for her raincoat.
"That won't do," he said. "The coat is too thin. Haven't you a warmer one? It is cold outside."
"It was raining before."
"It is still raining, but it is cold. Can't you put something on underneath? Another coat, or at least a sweater?"
"I have a sweater."
She went toward the larger suitcase. Ravitch noted that she had hardly unpacked anything. She got a black sweater out of the suitcase, took her jacket off, and pulled on the sweater. She had beautiful, straight shoulders. Then she took the Basque beret and put on her jacket and coat.
"Is this better?"
"Much better." They went down the stairs. The patron was no longer there. In his stead the concierge sat beside the keyboard. He was sorting letters and smelled of garlic. A spotted cat sat motionless beside him and watched him. Do you still have the feeling that you can't eat anything? Ravitch asked outside.
I don't know. Not much, I think.
Ravitch hailed a taxi. Well then, we'll drive to the Belle Aurore. One doesn't have to eat a full dinner there. The Belle Aurore was not crowded. It was already too late for that. They found a table in the small upstairs room with the low ceiling. Besides them, there was only one couple sitting by the window and eating cheese, and a solitary thin man with a mountain of oysters in front of him. The waiter came and eyed the checked tablecloth critically. Then he decided to change it.
Two vodkas, Ravitch ordered. Cold.
We'll drink something and eat hors d'oeuvre, he said to the woman. I think that's best for you. This restaurant is famous for its hors d'oeuvre. There's hardly anything else here. Anyhow, you seldom get to eat anything else. There are dozens of them, warm and cold, and they're all very good. We'll try them.
The waiter brought the vodka and got his pad ready.
A carafe of vin rosé, Ravitch said. Have you Anjou?
Anjou, open, rosé?
Very well, sir.
Fine. A large carafe in ice, and the hors d'oeuvre.
The waiter left. At the door he almost collided with a woman in a red feathered hat who was rushing up the stairs. She pushed him aside and approached the thin man with the oysters.
Albert, she said, you swine!
Shh! Shh! Albert gestured and turned around.
Don't shh! Shh! Me!
The woman put her wet umbrella across the table and sat down determinedly. Albert did not seem to be surprised.
Chérie,
he said, and began to whisper. Ravitch smiled and lifted his glass.
We'll drink this straight down. Salute.
Salute,
Jean Madou said, and drank. The hors d'oeuvre were rolled in on a small wagon.
What would you like?
Ravitch looked at the woman. I think it will be simplest if I fill a plate for you. He piled a plate full and handed it to her. It won't matter if you don't like any of it. There are more wagons to come. This is just the beginning. He filled a plate for himself and began to eat, not concerning himself further about her. Suddenly he felt very hungry. When he looked up after a while, he saw that she, too, was eating. He shelled a langoustine and held it out to her.
Try this. It's better than langouste. And now the pâté maison, with a crust of white bread. So that's not bad at all. And a little of the wine with it, light, dry, and cool.
You are going to a lot of trouble for me,
Jean Madou said.
Yes, like a head waiter,
Ravitch laughed.
No, but you are going to a lot of trouble for me.
I don't like to eat alone, that's all there is to it, just like you.
I'm not a good companion.
You are,
Ravitch replied. For dining, you are. For dining, you are a first-rate companion. I can't bear garrulous people, or those with loud voices. He looked across the room toward Albert. The red feathered hat was just explaining to him very audibly why he was such a swine, at the same time rhythmically rapping on the table with her umbrella. Albert was listening and did not seem impressed.
Joan Madou smiled briefly.
Neither can I.
Here comes the next wagon with supplies. Would you like to have something at once, or do you want a cigarette first?
A cigarette first.
All right. Today I have different cigarettes, not those with black tobacco.
He gave her a light. She leaned back and inhaled the smoke deeply. Then she looked straight at him.
It is good to sit this way, she said,
and for a moment it seemed to him that she was going to cry. They drank coffee in the Colisée. The large room facing the Champs-Élysées was overcrowded, but they secured a table downstairs in the bar. The upper part of the walls was glass, behind which parrots and cockatoos hovered, and multicolored tropical birds soared to and fro.
"Have you thought about what you're going to do?"
Ravitch asked.
"No, not yet."
"Did you have anything definite in mind when you came here?"
The woman hesitated.
"No, nothing in particular."
"I'm not asking out of curiosity."
"I know that. You think I should do something. That's what I want, too. I say so to myself every day, but then—"
"The landlord told me you were an actress. I didn't ask him. He told me when I asked for your name."
"Had you forgotten it?"
Ravitch glanced up. She looked at him calmly.
"Yes," he said,
I left the slip of paper in my hotel and couldn't recall it at the moment.
Do you know it now?
Yes. Joan Madou.
I'm not a good actress, the woman said. I only played small parts, nothing at all in the last few years. Also, I don't speak French well enough.
What do you speak, then?
Italian. I was brought up in Italy, and some English and Romanian. My father was Romanian. He is dead. My mother is British. She is still living in Italy. I don't know where.
Ravitch only half listened. He was bored, and he no longer knew what to talk about. Have you done anything else? He asked, just for the sake of asking. Besides those small parts you played?
Only what went with them. Some dancing and singing.
Ravitch looked at her doubtfully. She didn't seem suited for that. There was something pale and vague about her, and she was not attractive. That may be easier to try here, he said. For that you need not speak perfectly.
No, but first I have to find something. It is difficult if one doesn't know anyone.
Morozov, Ravitch suddenly thought, the Scheherazade.
Naturally, Morozov ought to know about such things.
The idea revived him. Morozov had dragged him into this dull evening. Now the woman could be passed on to him, and Boris would have a chance to show what he could do. Do you know Russian? He asked.
A little, a few songs, gypsy songs. They are similar to Romanian ones. Why?
I know someone who knows about these things. Maybe he can help you. I'll give you his address.
I don't think there's much point to it. Agents are the same everywhere. Recommendations are of little help.
Ravitch realized she thought he wanted to get rid of her in the easiest way. Since that was so, he protested. The man I mean is not an agent. He is the doorman of the Scheherazade. That's a Russian nightclub on Montmartre.
Doorman? Joan Madou lifted her head. That is something else, she said. Doormen are much better informed than agents. That may be something. Do you know him well?
Ravitch looked at her in surprise. Suddenly she had spoken like a professional. He is a friend of mine, he said. His name is Boris Morozov, and he has been with the Scheherazade for the last 10 years. There's always a pretty big show. They change the numbers frequently. He's on good terms with the manager. If there's no spot for you in the Scheherazade, he will be sure to know of something else. Will you try it?
Yes. When?
It would be best around 9 o'clock in the evening. He's not busy then, and he will have time for you. I'll tell him about it. Ravitch looked forward to seeing Morozov's face. Suddenly he felt better. The slight burden of responsibility he had still felt had disappeared. He had done what he could, and now it was up to her. Are you tired? He asked. Joan Madou looked straight into his eyes.
I'm not tired, she said. But I know that it is no pleasure to sit here with me. You came out of pity, and I thank you for it. You took me out of my room and you spoke to me. That means a great deal to me, since I've hardly spoken to anyone for days. Now I'll go. You have done more than enough for me. What would have become of me otherwise?
My God, Ravitch thought, now she is starting that. He looked uncomfortably at the glass wall before him. A fat dove was trying to ravish a cockatoo. The cockatoo was so bored that she did not even shake him off. She merely went on eating and ignored him. It was not pity.
What else?
The dove gave it up. He hopped down from the broad back of the cockatoo and began to clean his feathers. The cockatoo indifferently lifted her tail and defecated. We'll both drink a cognac now, Ravitch said. That's the best answer. But believe me, I'm not really such a philanthropist. There are many evenings when I sit around by myself. Do you consider that particularly interesting?
No, but I'm a bad partner. That's worse.
I've given up looking for partners. Here's your cognac. Salut.
Salut.
Ravitch put his glass down. So, and now we'll leave this menagerie. You wouldn't like to go back to your hotel, would you? Joan Madou shook her head. All right. Then let's go somewhere else. Let's go to the Scheherazade. We'll have a drink there. We both seem to need it. And at the same time, you can find out what's going on there. It was almost 3 o'clock in the morning. They stood in front of the Hotel de Milan. Have you had enough to drink? Ravitch asked. Joan Madou hesitated.
I thought I had enough when I was there in the Scheherazade.
but now here, looking at this door, it wasn't enough.
Something can be done about that. Maybe we can still get something here in the hotel. Otherwise we'll go to some bar and buy a bottle. Come.
She looked at him, then she looked at the door.
Very well, she said with determination, yet she continued to stand there.
To go up there, she said, in that empty room.
I'll go with you, and we'll take a bottle with us.
The doorman woke up.
Have you anything to drink? Ravitch asked.
Champagne cocktail?
The doorman asked immediately, businesslike, but still yawning.
Thank you, something stronger. Cognac, a bottle.
Courvoisier, Martel, Hennessy, Biscuit du Boucher.
Courvoisier.
Very well, sir. I'll take the cork out and bring the bottle up.
They walked upstairs.
Have you got your key? Ravitch asked the woman.
The room is not locked.
Your money and your papers might be stolen if you don't lock it.
That could happen even if I locked it.
That's true with these keys, although it isn't quite as easy then.
Maybe, but I don't want to come in alone from outside and take a key and open a door in order to enter an empty room. That's as if I were opening a tomb. It is enough already to have to enter this room, in which nothing awaits one but a few suitcases.
Nothing awaits us anywhere, Ravitch said. We always have to bring everything with us.
That may be, but there is at least sometimes a merciful illusion. Here there's nothing.
Joan Madou flung her basque beret and coat on the bed and looked at Ravitch. Her eyes were light and large in her pale face, and as though fixed in a furious desperation. She stood thus for a moment. Then she began to walk in the small room back and forth, with long strides, hands in the pockets of her jacket, resiliently swinging her body when she turned. Ravitch watched her attentively. Suddenly she had strength and a cat-like grace, and the room seemed much too narrow for her. There was a knock. The doorman brought in the cognac.
"Would the lady and gentleman care to eat something?" he asked. "Cold chicken? A sandwich?"
"That would be a waste of time, brother."
Ravitch paid and shoved him out of the room. Then he poured two glasses full.
"Here.
It is simple and barbaric, but the more primitive the better in difficult situations. Refinement is something for quiet times. Drink this."
"And then?"
"Then you will drink another."
"I have tried that. It didn't help. It is not good to be drunk when one is alone. Things just become sharper."
"One only has to be drunk enough. Then it works."
Ravitch sat on a narrow, wobbly chaise longue which stood by the wall opposite the bed. He hadn't seen it before.
"Was this here when you moved in?" he asked.
She shook her head.
"I had it put there. I didn't like to sleep in the bed. It seemed so pointless.
A bed, and to have to undress, and all that.
What for?"
"Mornings and in the daytime it was somehow possible, but nights—"
"You must have something to do." Ravitch lit a cigarette. "It's too bad we didn't meet Morozov at the Scheherazade. I didn't know that today was his day off. Do go there tomorrow night, about 9 o'clock. I'm sure he'll find something for you, even if it's work in the kitchen. And at least you would be busy at night. That's what you want, isn't it?"
"Yes."
Joan Madou stopped walking. She drank her glass of cognac and sat down on the bed.
"I've walked about, outside, every night. As long as one walks, everything is easier. Only when one sits down and the ceiling falls on one's head—"
"Didn't anything ever happen to you on the street? Nothing stolen?"
"No. I probably don't look as if I had anything one could steal."
She held her empty glass out to Ravitch.
"And as for the other, I waited for it often enough. At least to have someone speak to me, to be something more than mere nothing, mere walking, that at least eyes would look at one, eyes and not just stones, that one would not run around like an outcast, like someone on a strange planet."
She threw her hair back and took the glass that Ravitch handed her.
"I don't know why I'm talking about it," she said. "I don't want to. Maybe it is because I was silent all those days. Maybe because today, for the first time—"
She interrupted herself.
"Oh, don't listen to me."
"I'm drinking," Ravitch said. "Say whatever you want. It is night. No one hears you. I am listening to myself. Everything will be forgotten by tomorrow. He leaned back. Somewhere in the house there was the sound of rushing water. The radiator rattled and the rain knocked with soft fingers at the window. When one comes back and switches off the light, and the darkness falls on one like chloroform on a wad of cotton, and one turns on the light again and stares and stares. I must be drunk already, Ravitch thought, earlier than usual today. Or it may be the faint light, or both. This is not the same insignificant, faded woman any longer. This is someone else. Suddenly there are eyes, there is a face, something is looking at me. It must be the shadows. The soft fire behind my forehead that is illuminating her, the first glow of drunkenness. He did not listen to what Joan Madou said. He knew about all that, and no longer wanted to know about it. To be alone, the eternal refrain of life. It wasn't better or worse than anything else. One talked too much about it. One was always and never alone. A violin, suddenly, somewhere out of a twilight, in a garden on the hills around Budapest. The heavy scent of chestnuts, the wind, and dreams crouched on one's shoulders like young owls, their eyes becoming lighter in the dusk. A night that never became night, the hour when all women were beautiful. He looked up.
Thank you, Joan Madou said.
Why?
Because you've let me talk without listening. It helped me. I needed it.
Ravitch nodded. He noticed that her glass was empty again. All right, he said. I'll leave the bottle here for you. He got up. A room. A woman. Nothing else. A pale face in which there was no longer any radiance.
Do you really want to go?
Joan Madou asked. She looked around as if someone were hidden in the room. Here is Morozov's address. His name, so that you won't forget it. Tomorrow night at 9. Ravitch wrote it on a prescription pad. Then he tore the sheet off and put it on the suitcase. Joan Madou had got up. She reached for her coat and beret. Ravitch looked at her. You needn't see me down.
I don't mean to do that. I just don't want to stay here, not now. I want to walk around somewhere.
But you'll have to come back again later anyhow. The same thing all over again. Why don't you stay here, now that you've already overcome it?
It will be morning soon. When I come back, it will be morning. Then it will be easier.
Ravitch went to the window. It was still raining. Streamers, wet and grey, drifted with the wind around the yellow halos of the street lamps. Come, he said. We'll have another drink and then you'll go to bed. This is no weather for walking. He picked up the bottle. Suddenly Joan Madou was close at his side.
Don't leave me here, she said quickly and urgently, and he felt her breath. Don't leave me here alone tonight. I don't know why, but not tonight. Tomorrow I'll have courage, but tonight I can't be alone. I'm weary and weak and spent. I have no strength left. You shouldn't have taken me out, not tonight. I can't be alone now.
Ravitch carefully put the bottle on the table and loosened her hands from his arm. Child, he said, we have to get used to everything sometime. He glanced at the chaise longue. I could sleep on that. There is no point in going anywhere else now. I need a few hours' sleep. I have to operate at 9 in the morning. I could sleep here just as well as at my own place. It wouldn't be my first night watch. Would that do? She nodded. She was still standing close beside him. I must be out by 7:30. Damned early. It will wake you up.
That doesn't matter. I'll get up and make breakfast for you. Everything...
Nothing of the sort, Ravitch said. I'll have my breakfast in some café like a sensible working man, coffee with rum and croissant. I can do everything else in the hospital. It will delight me to ask Eugénie for a bath. All right, let's stay here. Two lost souls in November. You take the bed. If you like, I can go down and stay with the old doorman till you're ready.
No,
Joan Madou said. I won't run away. Besides, we'll need something, pillows, blankets, and such.
I can ring for him.
I can do that myself. Ravitch looked for the button. It's better if a man does it. The doorman came quickly. He had another bottle of cognac in his hand. "You overrate us," Ravitch said. "Many thanks. We belong to the post-war generation. A blanket, a pillow, and some sheets. I've got to sleep here. Too cold and too much rain outside. I had a bad case of pneumonia, and it's only 2 days since I left bed. Could you arrange that?"
"Oh, naturally, sir. I thought something of the sort myself."
"All right." Ravitch lit a cigarette. "I'll go out into the hall. I'll look at the shoes in front of the doors. That's an old hobby of mine." "I won't run away," he said, noticing Joan Madu's expression. "I'm not Joseph of Egypt. I'll not leave my coat behind." The doorman returned with the things. He stopped abruptly when he saw Ravitch standing in the hall. Then his face brightened. "It's not often one sees anything like that," he said. "I rarely do it myself, only on birthdays and Christmas. Let me have those things. I'll take them inside."
"What's that?"
"A hot water bottle, because of your pneumonia."
"Excellent. But I keep my lungs warm with cognac."
Ravitch pulled a few bills out of his pocket.
"I'm sure you have no pajamas, sir. I could get you a pair."
"Thanks, brother."
Ravitch looked at the old man. "They'd certainly be too small for me."
"On the contrary, they would fit you. They're perfectly new. Confidentially, an American once gave them to me as a gift. He had received them from a lady. I don't wear such things. I wear nightshirts. They're perfectly new, sir."
"All right, bring them up. Let's have a look at them." Ravitch waited in the hall. Three pairs of shoes stood before the doors. A pair of high boots with stretchable elastic sides. Thunderous snores emerged from the room behind. The others were a pair of brown men's shoes and a pair of high-buttoned patent leather shoes. They both stood in front of one door and seemed strangely forlorn, although they were together. The doorman brought the pajamas. They were marvelous pajamas, blue artificial silk with gold stars on them. Ravitch contemplated them for a while, speechless. He understood the American.
"Magnificent, aren't they?" the doorman asked proudly. The pajamas were new. They were still in the box of the Grand Magasin du Louvre, where they had been bought.
"It's a pity," Ravitch said. "I'd like to have seen the lady who chose them."
"You may have them for tonight. You don't have to buy them, sir."
"How much do I owe you?"
"Whatever you think."
Ravitch drew his hand from his pocket.
"Well, this is too much, sir," the doorman said.
"Aren't you a Frenchman?"
"I am, from Saint-Nazaire."
"Then you've been spoiled by the Americans. Besides, nothing is too much for those pajamas."
"I'm glad you like them. Good night, sir. I'll call on the lady for them tomorrow."
"I'll return them myself tomorrow morning. Wake me at 7:30, but knock quietly. I'll hear you. Good night."
"Look at that," Ravitch said to Joan Madu, showing her the pajamas. "A costume for Santa Claus. This doorman is a magician. I'll even put the things on. It takes both courage and unself-consciousness to be ridiculous."
He arranged the blankets on the chaise longue. It didn't matter to him whether he slept in his hotel or here. In the hall he had seen a possible bathroom and had got a new toothbrush from the doorman. All the other things didn't matter. The woman was somehow like a patient. He filled a tumbler with cognac and set it at the bedside with one of the small glasses the doorman had brought. "I think that will be enough for you," he said. "It's simpler this way. I won't need to get up and refill it. I'll take the bottle and the other glass over here with me."
"I don't need the small glass. I can drink from the other."
"That's even better."
Ravitch arranged himself on the chaise longue. He was glad the woman wasn't fussing about whether he was comfortable. She had what she wanted. Thank God she wasn't displaying any superfluous housewifely qualities. He filled his glass and put the bottle on the floor.
"Salut."
"Salut,"
Joan Madu said.
"And thanks."
"That's all right. I wasn't in the mood for walking in the rain anyway."
"Is it still raining?"
"Yes."
The gentle knocking penetrated the quiet on the outside, as though something wanted to come in, grey, cheerless, and formless, something that was sadder than sadness.
a remote, anonymous memory, an endless wave drifting in toward them and trying to take back and bury what it had once washed up on an island and forgotten, a little bit of humankind and light and thought.
A good night for drinking.
Yes, and a bad night for being alone. Ravitch remained silent for a while.
We have to get used to it, he said then. All that held things together before is now destroyed. Today we have fallen apart like a necklace of glass beads whose string is broken. Nothing is solid any more. He refilled his glass.
As a boy, I slept in a meadow one night. It was summer and the sky was very clear. Before I fell asleep, I saw Orion on the horizon, standing above the woods. Then I woke up in the middle of the night, and suddenly Orion was standing high above me. I've never forgotten that. I had learned that the Earth is a planet and rotates, but I had learned it as one learns something from books and does not quite realize. But now, for the first time, I felt that it really was like that. I felt that the Earth was silently flying through the immensities of space. I felt it so strongly that I almost believed I had to hold on to something in order not to be hurled off. Probably it happened because, emerging from a deep sleep and bereft for a moment of memory and habit, I looked into the huge, displaced sky. Suddenly the Earth was no longer firm, and since then it has never become wholly firm again. He emptied his glass. It makes some things more difficult and others easier. He looked at Joan Madou. I don't know how far you've gone. When you are tired enough, just don't answer any more. Not yet. Soon. There's a spot somewhere that is still awake. Awake and cold.
Ravitch put the bottle down on the floor beside him. From the warmth of the room a brown tiredness trickled slowly into him. The shadows came, the flapping of wings. A strange room, night, and outside, like remote drums, the monotonous beating of the rain. A hut and a little light on the verge of chaos, a small fire in a meaningless wilderness, an unknown face toward which one spoke.
"Have you ever felt that, too?" he asked.
She remained silent a while.
"Yes. Well, not exactly. Differently. When for days I had not spoken to anyone and walked for nights, and there were people everywhere who belonged somewhere, who were going somewhere, who were at home somewhere, only I wasn't. Then everything slowly became unreal, as if I were drowned and walking through a strange city underwater."
Outside, someone came up the stairs. Keys jingled and a door clicked shut. Immediately afterwards, water gushed from a faucet.
"Why do you stay in Paris if you don't know anyone?" Ravitch asked.
He felt that he was getting very sleepy.
"I don't know. Where else shall I go?"
"Haven't you any place to go back to?"
"No. One cannot go back."
The wind chased a shower of drops across the window.
"Why did you come to Paris?" Ravitch asked.
Joan Madou did not answer. He thought she had already fallen asleep.
"Razinsky and I came to Paris because we wanted to separate," she said then.
Ravitch heard it without surprise. There were hours when nothing surprised one. In the room opposite, the man who had just come in began to vomit. They heard his muffled gasps through the door.
"Oh, then why were you so desperate?" Ravitch asked. "Because he was dead. Dead. Suddenly he was no more, never to be called back again. Dead, no chance to make things right. Don't you understand?"
Joan Madou sat up in bed and stared at Ravitch.
"Yes," he said, and thought, "it is not true. Not because he was dead. Because he left you before you could leave him. Because he left you alone before you were ready."
I should have been different to him. I was..."
"Forget it. Regret is the most useless thing in the world. One cannot recall anything. And one cannot rectify anything. Otherwise we would all be saints. Life did not intend to make us perfect. Whoever is perfect belongs in a museum."
Joan Madou did not answer. Ravitch watched her drink and lie back on her pillow. There was still something, but he was too tired to think about it. Besides, it made no difference to him.
He wanted to sleep. Tomorrow he had to operate. All this no longer concerned him. He put the empty glass on the floor next to the bottle. Strange where one sometimes gets oneself, he thought.